This is Michael Vandervoort on Driving the Green Star. Good afternoon. This is Michael Vandervoort on Drive Through HR, my first official hosting of being the new co-host on a team of four. So, good afternoon. Our guest today is Michael Malady.
It's okay.
Malady. Sorry.
I've heard so many ways over the years, so I answer to a lot of things. So.
Okay. Our guest today is Michael Malady. Michael, how are you? Sorry for misguessing your name, but we'll move past it. Good. Michael Vandervoort. Tell us about yourself, Michael. I know you're near me in Atlanta, but tell everyone where you're from and what's going on today.
Absolutely. No, thank you, Mike. I'm currently working at the American Cancer Society. I've been in HR for going on 15 years now. I've kind of bounced around a little bit. I started it with AT&T, or I guess back then it was Singular Wireless, and doing both HRIS work there, but then also generalist work there. And I've moved there supporting different clients, kind of an HR business partner role. And I was there probably about 6 or 7 years, and did a stint about 5 years with Turner Broadcasting in a similar manner, and both employee relations. So that was fun, but also in the business partner role. And then most recently, I've been with the American Cancer Society for almost 4 years. It'll be in April. So in that role as well. So it's been
great.
Been a good time. So yeah.
Great. So you're in Atlanta proper, right? I'm in the mountains in North Georgia. I think we're experiencing a real life HR horror story today. And that,
you are.
Are
you?
I think so.
That
mean you're both
with the
in?
Ice up there.
We're both
in rain right now, so that's all right. No.
Go ahead.
No, I know you guys are getting some ice, and I don't know what else up there. I know everything.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting ice and sleet, and I don't know about Atlanta, but it's the state of Georgia. Nisha, the governor, declared a state of emergency for the next 24 hours. Although it may be that it was a slight overreaction because of the giant snow and ice storm that you guys had in Atlanta last year, right? That was like Ice Jam or something, Michael.
No, it was, I don't even remember what they got. Yeah, it was awful last year. And I think everyone, the country had a good laugh at our expense of about 1 inch of ice or snow. And just the complete disaster looked like The Walking Dead down here, literally. I think they did. They were a little gun shy. So I think schools were closing on Saturday about 48 hours before we even knew whether we were getting rain or snow or nothing, which right now it's nothing.
Come on. So. Y'all know that. Yeah. I mean, like, that's all. The school's just trying to find a reason to close. Oh, it's cold.
Oh, totally.
Let's close.
Totally, yeah.
Crystal, I wasn't sure if you were going to – is that you? I didn't know. Is that you?
That is me. It's me.
Sorry.
So,
I'm not in trying to intrude on your show. I wasn't sure it was empty today, and I wasn't sure who was hosting. So.
This is our show, and you were on the board. I just called to speak in because, I mean, Michael and I, like, we have a lot of Twitter love, but we don't get often a chance to speak. So, had to pop on.
There you go.
So the theme today. Well, all right, cool. Well, we'll just roll with it then. I'm not. Yeah. So the theme today is HR horror stories, and it's actually the theme of the week. We had an announcement on Friday where there's a new drive through HR, and Crystal Miller and Michael Vandervoort have joined William Tinkup and Nisha Fragavan as for the team of four that's going to co-host the show. So we're working out wrinkles and trying to figure out who's going to do what. And so we're here today with Michael. So Michael, beyond the ice storms, the HR horror stories, Crystal was out recruiting talent like mad. So I'm going to like roll it over to you and see what's your first HR horror story.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I remember my first big one, you know, that I remember dealing with was when I was supporting, I've supported different IT departments over the course of my career, but one of the ones back a couple of companies ago, we we were having an issue with the VP who was over internet security at the time, and it's obviously that whole type of job has matured over the years, but this was probably a good 12 years ago, and he just, there was a lot of times where he just wasn't attending meetings, he wasn't showing up to stuff, and we really actually, we had to go kind of in the back end and really look at what he was doing online and just spending his time, because he was basically never leaving his office, and his boss was a little concerned about what was going on. And we come to find out, as with most fun stories, it's always, you know, it usually ends with looking at pornography at work, right? So this one was, he was the guy who actually wrote the policy on acceptable internet use at work. He actually, we caught him looking at things that I think would probably fit well into the 50 Shades of Grey type stuff, but we caught him doing stuff at the office, and we were trying to get, you know, in the course of the interview and discussing what he was doing, you know, he was kind of playing it off as, well, I was making sure that we were blocking these sites, and but he was in there for, you know, we could track how long he was on there and different, you know, how many different things he was looking at and sites. And those things are never very comfortable conversations. But he kind of stuck to his guns on what he was doing. But it ended up as with anything else, going with we ended up having to let him go for that. But it was an interesting. It's always interesting when, unfortunately, you have to see what people are looking at out there. So,
Michael, like the 50 Shades of Grey movie, I feel like this has been sanitized for mass consumption. So. You had a porn problem is kind of what you're saying.
No.
Okay.
Well, that's you know, I'd say I wish, over the course of my tenure, I wish that that was the, you know, I mean, there's always, it pops up every once in a while, you know, like people do it, looking at things online. And I think people have gotten a little more savvy about trying to get around firewalls and things and stuff like that in terms of how to find stuff out there. But, it does always amaze me how much time people try to spend looking at that while actually working or supposed to be working. So,
right? Like, I think the ingenuity that people will put into trying to get around rules, if they just applied that to their own job, imagine how successful they would be. But yeah. So, like, how bad was this? Are we talking like just vanilla, or was this guy into some really crazy stuff? And it was
it was definitely not vanilla. If my memory serves me correct, there was lots of leather and, you know, whips and different things like that. It was stuff that, and really, when you looked at you know that judgment, so it was one of those things where, like, yeah, I don't ever want to picture that person doing any of that to begin with. So it was it was pretty bad. It was one of those things where it was good for stories within the HR department for a little bit after that. So it's always can't talk about while it's going on, but it's fun after the fact or to discuss.
How did that termination meeting go? Like I can just kind of picture this in my head. You know, I'm sorry, so and so, we have to let you go because you're into kind of some crazy stuff that we don't approve of.
Well, yeah. And that was the thing, like, part of the interview when we pulled them in was, you know, to kind of, you know, you start, when you interview people, you know, you start general and kind of work your way down. With him, we knew what we wanted to get to. So we didn't start too general. We wanted, we started about how does he spend his time on the internet, and then we started showing him, like, okay, we know you visited these sites, and these are the things you're looking at, and you just present it directly to him and see how he reacts to it. And initially, he was like, no, I wasn't really spending time on those. I was just, you know, checking to make sure that they were being blocked from on the firewall. But then, you know, the more evidence we kept showing to him about how long he was on there and the volume of time he was spent doing these things, like, eventually, you know, when it came time to the termination, he was basically, he admitted it, but he wasn't sorry about it. Even up until the point where we terminated him, I think he just accepted it. But he wasn't really. I don't think he really felt like he was doing anything wrong. Amazingly enough, so.
Isn't it kind of fascinating the sense of entitlement that employees can have when you present them with, "Hey, you broke the rule. You do the rules. You broke the rules, and we caught you breaking the rules." Like we had, doing performance development with a recruiting firm, and we had a software on there that allowed us to see everything they did. I mean, every keystroke, every phone call, everything, right? And so, yeah, we had a very similar issue where somebody decided it would be fun to spend the time in their glass-walled offices doing things that maybe they ought not be doing. And, you know, when we presented with it, he was mad. He was genuinely angry that we would look at his web web history. And it's like, dude, you knew we did that. This wasn't hidden from you. But,
So that, Crystal, that, you know, that notion of, you know, looking at history, right? I mean, all companies do that, and I think a lot of companies, you know, have tools in place if they work on, like, this dashboard for Blog Talk Radio. They have tools in place, you know, that kind of form. But, like, Michael, like, when this came about, this particular story, how did you guys learn about this in the first place? I mean, what was the genesis of the complaint or whatever?
You know, I think as with most things, it starts with performance, right? The job performance was slipping, you know, in terms of not turning around deliverables fast enough, not actually turning around deliverables at all, having to, you know, constantly be, and, you know, and at this person's level, you know, he was, you know, VP, you know, you didn't expect a lot of handholding to have to go on. It was, you know, they were supposed to be delivering things proactively. A lot of it was, he, quite honestly, and as creepy as it is, you know, he was in his office a lot with his door closed, you know, just like there was a lot of like lack of interaction, lack of performance, which really constituted the question of like, hey, what is he doing if he's not delivering and doing work? And we know that he's obviously on his computer. So, you know, how do we go about that and see what exactly it is that he's doing? So that's how it unfolded to, you know, and as you peel the onion back in any investigation, you always find something that's probably a little bit deeper than what you expect. So that was, we weren't expecting to see exactly that. but that's kind of the impetus of why we started looking into what we could, you know, what was going on there.
Yeah, that analogy you just used, I mean, I think that, you know, for any of these kind of, whether it's a sexual harassment complaint that turns into an investigation, that way, you know, for me, it seems like over and over and over again, I've seen like, you know, probably hundreds of these cases over my 25 years plus in HR, and there's always the onion. You know, you take what you look at the first level, and then it's something else, and it's something else, and it's by the time you get down to the rotten core, it's usually that's when it becomes a true horror story, right? I mean, I had a guy one time at a company that I worked at who, and this was 20 plus years ago, the guy went to Portugal with his female, a female coworker, and he was, you know, he was an executive, as you mentioned, and over, he you know, he didn't, I don't know what he did because we weren't there in Portugal, but the complaint that came back was while they were at dinner on business travel, he drank too much and made, you know, hit on her kind of thing. And that turned into a complaint, and this was a really, really good manager who actually had no performance issues or anything. But once we started, you know, once the initial complaint broke loose, we found all sorts of other, you know, all sorts of other issues under, you know, hiding under the table. And I think that's a common, very common theme. I don't know about your experience.
That is pretty common. I know I had a similar issue where we had two very high-performing employees who didn't really have any performance issues, but it turned in, and they weren't even reporting to each other, but it turned into, she complained about him in terms of sexual harassment, and then as we peeled the onion back, we realized how involved in the relationship they were, and it was really not one-sided. Like, you know, she presented a side of him, you know, kind of pursuing her and creating a lot of issues at the workplace. And as we interviewed him and kind of dug a little deeper, it was really more her that was pursuing him and sending him, you know, emails and photos and other sort of things that, you know, shouldn't have been, you know, that. And so it, as you peeled it back, it was definitely more complex than that. And the reality is that they were both incredibly high performing and, you know, pretty critical employees, but they were both equally and, you know, engaged in, you know, and it's one thing to have a relationship, you know, at work, and we didn't really have a policy against that, but it was kind of the misuse of, you know, emails and photos that they were sending via company email, as well as inappropriate behavior and basically, you know, feeling like we had to disinfect conference rooms after we realized where they had been and things like that. And, it was, you know, it got pretty out of control, and it was clear that there was very much a, you know, weird dynamic between the two of them in terms of, like, she wanted to stop it, but then didn't want to stop it. And, you know, it became very much just quite a soap opera. And, you know, which resulted in both of us actually, both of them ending up having to leave because they were just disrupting the workplace so much. But it was tough to lose two, you know, this wasn't a bad performing employee and two bad performing employees. This was two actually very high performing employees, but getting caught up in, you know, behavior that they didn't need to be caught up in. So.
Crystal, you want to do it's like about quarter after, you want to do a reset? She may be gone. Okay. So it's 1:15. This is Drive Through HR. I'm Michael Vandervoort. My guest is Michael Malotti from Red Cross. We're both in Georgia. We're both kind of dealing with some wintry weather. But our topic today is HR horror stories. And the first 15 minutes or so has been, you know, sexual escapades and some bad decision making by human beings, which I think is a pretty chronic human condition in the workplace. Any other specific story, Mike? Or you want to, or is there a different angle on the same topic that you want to cover?
Michael, before we do that, can we hit on the last story? Sorry, I was muted.
Oh, no problem.
Oh, sorry. I thought maybe you just fell off.
No problem.
No, my call dropped and it had to be like unmuted so everybody can hear me again. So, you know, technology, gotta love it. But you know, it was interesting as I was listening to your last story. I kind of thought, as funny as these are, and they really are, like there are just some really crazy stories that we all have to deal with. You brought up the whole disruption to the workplace and the hit. I mean, all I could think about is the hit that takes on not just the immediate productivity of those two people, but the soap opera that they spin out around them impacts like all of the people that they come into contact with. So how big did some of these, like this story that you were telling with the two people or the guy with the porn, like how big did that horror story mushroom out and affect those people around them?
That was the interesting piece to it is that, as we, you know, dug into it, it was coworkers in both departments that they worked in. It was kind of the worst kept secret. Like everyone knew pretty much what was going on. There was a perception of favoritism because they always wanted to work together on projects that basically might have denied other people work that would have been interesting, you know, but no one really wanted to speak up about it because, you know, it was just uncomfortable. So, you know, it had tentacles in different areas that really impacted not only the cohesiveness of the team, but also even other people's ability to kind of perhaps do work that they might have liked to do. There was an interesting component to that that grew out of that and as kind of the peeling the onion layer, but it definitely grew into that where we had to, you know, address that as well. So and reset the team dynamics.
Which can take just so long. I mean, I remember running when I was working in HR, one of my favorite HR horror stories revolved around this these two people that had decided to engage in an affair, which, you know, far be it from me to make any kind of judgment on people's marital lives, which is kind of between you and yours, right? So, but when it happens at work, that's a little bit of a different story. And so he had engaged in sexual congress with his subordinate. And that was not smart because what had ended up is like this weird relationship where he would trade information from board meetings for sexual favors. And that was not a good thing. But she would turn around and share what she knew. And everyone knew how she had found out, except for the executive board, because, you know, we were all busy with other things. But so over time, it became like an office cancer. And it took months to write that shit back, right? Because there was broken trust and, you know, things that were meant to be for a specific group of people had been shared into other ranks. And you can't really undo the damage that causes.
Right. I mean, there's sometimes that, you know, that really creates issues and, you know, beyond the performance and productivity, but just the team dynamic and having people trust each other again. And even if you do cut out the cancer, you know, and eliminate that, there's still that sense of having to readjust and re-level set with those employees that can delay and take more time than even the investigation and the actual, you know, process took. So, absolutely.
Michael, what would you, I mean, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of, right, sexual harassment training, do the educate your people. But people's behavior, I mean, people are people in the workplace and outside the workplace, right? So what would you do if you could, you know, what would you do, I guess, as a, you know, as steps for this kind of stuff? You know, how do you keep managers from going down the wrong path and people from trading? That was a great story, by the way, Crystal. Trading board secrets for sex. I mean, this kind of stuff sounds crazy when you talk about it, but it happens in every workplace every day, I think.
No, well, I'm sure, it's everywhere. I think it is. It's about education, but I think more than that, because I think, you know, most companies have some sense of such kind of sexual harassment training, or a lot of these days it's farmed out as maybe a webinar or something that they sign off every year on or something like that, where I think people don't really pay as close attention to it. And I think that there's something in there where we could make it more impactful to them in terms of what is the impact these situations have, and kind of to our point about, you know, what's the impact to the business beyond just, you know, the board secrets, but also team dynamics and things like that. And I don't think people really are able to kind of translate it to, all right, how would this impact me if this occurred? And I think that somehow, you know, coming up with a way to have them, you know, kind of personalize it a little bit more allows them to find that, it can maybe be more impactful to it.
Yeah. I think the other thing too is that, you know, we can, you know, we could probably tell stories about, you know, sexual harassment or inappropriate kind of liaisons in the workplace this whole week. But honestly, that's not the only kind of HR horror story that's out there. That's just one of a bunch. I mean, mm-hmm. I've had experience with, you know, workplace violence and many other things. What other kind of HR horror stories have you had to deal with in your career? You got another example?
Thankfully, I will say I haven't had to deal with workplace violence, but I'm sure I know other people have, and I can only imagine that's a difficult one. I think, you know, for me, it was, you know, some of the hard stories really begin with just employee performance. You know, things begin slipping, and then they start throwing out, you know, it seems like it's going to be a simple, okay, performance management, let's coach and counsel, and then, you know, turn into some level of whether it's corrective action or write-ups. But usually, invariably, the employee will start throwing out buzzwords related to, you know, retaliation or harassment or, you know, hostile work environment. No, I know, right?
And, you know, I'm an addict.
Exactly, right. I, you know, and in fact, so, yeah, and, you know, and those are the ones where it, I think, infuriates, you know, the management and whatnot a little bit more, because it ends up slowing the process down a bit. But, you know, it does require us doing some level of due diligence to look into it. And invariably, you can tell, you know, if you've been in HR long enough, you can tell whether or not is there any legitimacy to this. But, and you can swiftly kind of push it away and say, no, this is about you, not about everybody else. But, you know, occasionally there's, you know, smoke or fire to it, and you have to, that changes the outcome of, or changes how you approach things, which, you know, is a realistic situation. I think, in fact, you know, recently dealing with, you know, bullying is a kind of a popular thing now, where people will throw out, I'm being bullied. And we, you know, we had people who were struggling in performance, but then throw out that how they're being bullied by a coworker, and that, you know, that I think that's still new enough to say, okay, where's the fine line between bullying, and is it really bullying? Is it just people not getting along? You know, where does that draw the line? And those take time, unfortunately, to sort out. And, you know, sometimes you have to talk to more people than you'd like to get the answer to it. That's always, you know, it's just you know, it kind of sucks your day or weeks away, but it, you know, you have to legitimately take those things seriously. So,
which kind of takes you back to the basic stuff, right? You have to be prepared. You have to have policies and procedures in place, mm-hmm. that outline the rules, and you have to have a process for reporting, and you have to have a process for investigating, and you have to do the due diligence. I mean, all the core work people mm-hmm. think that is not strategic in HR, but in many cases, it actually is, because without those processes and those steps, you know, these stories create all the chaos that we were just talking about.
broken trust, many other things. So sometimes those compliance things are not glamorous, but sometimes they are really are, you know, a core part of the business that gets overlooked, I think, a lot. And like I said, it's a little unfortunate because we'd all rather do more fun things. I know I would anyway, for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, I think you're right. I mean, I think you know, people kind of roll their eyes when it comes to compliance or, you know, those, you know, code of ethics and, you know, things like that where they have to either take the class every year or, you know, sign off on something and be like, oh, that'll never happen to me. But not having those things in place truly, you know, create larger issues down the road and don't give you the mechanism to act as quickly as you would like to, at, you know, at the end of the day. So.
Yeah, I think we're down to about 5 minutes. I think one of the classic, you know, might be urban legend kind of things is, you know, that the old quid pro quo harassment kind of story where a manager hits on someone. But that I mean, that's real. But Michael, like a horror story, I think, isn't it? I mean, that's bad enough. But what if you have it, like you talked about, you had a couple of really strong performers who got, you know, got involved in a relationship in the workplace, and it took them both out. What do you do if you run into, like, you know, a leader who's, you know, otherwise great and but, you know, lacks judgment in this type of stuff? How do you deal with that? I mean, as an HR professional, what's been your experience in that regard?
The first thing really is there's kind of two things. One is you make the best effort to treat them or investigate them or approach that no different in a way in terms of your approach than anyone else, right? I mean, you know, whether it's the, you know, frontline employee to that level, certain things you do no matter what you are, you know, no matter who they are. You just, you know, you need to be objective. You need to gather the facts, get both sides, you know, do whatever investigation you need to. The difference to that, though, is sometimes, especially if they're great performers, is you're going to run into the point fact that, you know, the people above them are willing to give them a pass at certain things. And that's where, you know, the conversations of politics really kind of take place in explaining, you know, that sometimes you can't, you know, and, you know, part of our job in HR is to push that consistency and push that ability to say, look, we can't give this person a pass, and here's why, you know, and pushing to be for fair treatment and things like that. But a lot of times that takes some convincing and conversations that occur, you know, behind the scenes as you go through this to get there to the end result or whatever that end result is, and making sure that at least we're being consistent with how we approach it. Because the minute you start making exceptions for one person or one group of people, you know, you just create, you know, the larger the risk that you create, and the actual larger the horror story will be at the end of the day if there's, you know, if you're constantly making exceptions or not very consistent with how you approach different similar situations and things like that.
Basic blocking and tackling. We're down to about 3 minutes. Crystal, you got anything you want to throw in here, or should we get ready to? She's probably muted.
I think we're here to hear Michael. So, Michael, I mean, are there any first words people know about, or that last horror story that you just couldn't help but tell?
You know, I think for me, one of the ones that I love is when you're investigating someone and they, you know, I had someone, I think it was not a couple of years ago, where they would constantly throw out how many lawyers they know. And, you know, in terms of during the course of the investigation, and kind of throw out the, you know, whether or not they'll, you know, they'll file a suit or a claim and things like that. And someone was throwing around, oh, I know people at this firm and this firm. And I actually had to tell him, you know, A, that it wasn't the first time that someone had, you know, threatened to file a suit against not against the company, not me personally, but secondly, that didn't really, you know, that didn't intimidate me. So if he was trying to go with that, then, you know, he needed to, you know, find a different tact. And those are always, those are always interesting because I think people feel like they can just throw those, you know, those kind of things out, and we're just supposed to say, oh, in that case, we'll just leave you alone and you can go back doing whatever, you know, your bad behavior.
Which you cannot do.
Exactly. Yeah, you have attorneys.
You can't ignore it. But hey, guys, exactly. We're actually almost out of time, so I'm going to have to cut your story short. I'm so sorry. Where can people find you, ATLSC grad, on Twitter, and where else?
Yes, I'm on LinkedIn, Michael Milady, and my Facebook as well. So.
Perfect. Well, thank you for sharing your HR horror stories, and we will be back tomorrow with John Jorgensen.
Thank you, guys.